You're listening to Stateside. I'm April Baer. This is the time of year when we transition from the customary December festing into the third winter holiday, the North American International Auto Show. Today, the car and truck of the year were announced in Detroit as usual, but there was no auto show to surround the Corvette and the Kia Telluride with the customary pomp and circumstance. That's because this year the auto shows moved to June. Change is in the air. Paul Eisenstein is the publisher of the automotive news site, thedetroitbureau.com. Hi there, Paul.
Hi, good to be with you, and congratulations on the new post.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here. Can you recap for us why the show's organizers decided to move the auto show to summer?
Well, I'll tell you what. There are so many changes reshaping the industry as a whole, and particularly when it comes to auto shows, that they really had no choice. Number one, they faced a lot of new competition. Curiously, the one that proved the most deadly was the Consumer Electronics Show, or CES, out in Las Vegas, which has become its own, essentially has had its own sub-auto show launch there. A lot of automakers go out because the car is becoming essentially a computer on wheels.
This isn't just lost Twitter energy. This is actual buying attention that's moving to other places.
Yeah, exactly. So the CES show has become very important. Automakers want to go out there because they have a lot of attention from the high-tech world that they may not get at a traditional auto show. Another factor is that, well, of course, I mean, let's face it, nobody really likes to come in from California or Tokyo or from parts in Germany to be here in the middle of winter. So that's always been a factor.
I'm shocked.
Yeah, so am I. But the other factor that's come in is that automakers are rethinking how they spend their money, and we're. A number of automakers have decided, well, Detroit doesn't buy a lot of our cars, particularly with the German luxury brands. And other manufacturers are just saying we can put our money elsewhere, say doing a private show or going to the Texas State Fair or the Pebble Beach Concours, or any number of alternatives where they aren't necessarily fighting against another 20 or 30 manufacturers for limited access to the journalists that they'd like to get to write about their new products. So when you add all that together, there's been a real reshaping of auto shows in general around the world, and in particular Detroit, had to move to try to find essentially a new identity.
Well, the auto show is, of course, a huge deal in terms of the hundreds of millions of dollars it pumps into Detroit metro area's economy. But there's a lot more going on here. We should mention the charity preview that precedes it. It raises millions of dollars of increasingly important funding for metro area nonprofits like the Boys and Girls Club, Mott Children's Hospital. I take it the preview is moving to June as well?
Yeah, it is. And it's very interesting. They are going to try to reshape what that preview is, much like they're reshaping the auto show. One of the good things about being in June, and by the way, we should discuss some of the problems, but one of the good things is you can do things outdoors. So they are not just limiting the show itself to being inside the traditional spaces of Cobo or whatever you want to call it these days, TCF.
TCF, right.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It'll still be Cobo to most of us.
Right.
But the charity preview is going to be doing the same thing. They, in fact, have come up with a modified dress code, and they're going to have two different ticket levels. So I gather you can get a relatively cheap ticket, but you won't be able to see everything. And maybe that means you won't be able to get some of that really bad champagne either.
I've seen this dress code listed as summer chic or tropical dressy. So what are we talking here? Homecoming is chaperoned by Tommy Bahama?
Yeah, something like that. It's going to be definitely a lot looser, though it sounds like the high dollar tickets will still, if not black tie, maybe we'll be seeing white tie, which makes a lot more sense in June.
What's the thinking behind these changes? Who does the preview want to attract?
I think they want to get a broader audience. They want to change the feeling of the event to try to get a lot of the people that don't normally come. And if you consider the tickets are, you know, in the range of $400, there aren't that many people, and the average consumer, the average car buyer, really can't afford to go to it. So I think they're trying to reach out to some people who have a little bit of money, but not that much, and get them involved in the show. One of the interesting things that they're trying to do, too, with June is try to connect with so many of the other events that are going on in the city. For example, the annual Detroit Grand Prix over on Belle Isle. And there's so many other events that, talking with Rod Alberts, who heads the Detroit Auto Dealers Association, the group that sponsors this show, they really want to be part of a broad summer celebration. And with that, try to bring in more people. It's going to be a challenge. So they have to be really creative.
Right. Paul, the show is materializing against the background of 2019 and the GM strike. One of the concessions that came out of negotiations last year is the conversion of GM's Detroit Hamtramck plant into a hub for electric trucks to the tune of $3 billion. Mm-hmm. We've seen other makers talking about their own deepening relationships with EV vehicles. What might we watch for at this year's auto show that might tell us whether the big three are ready for an increasingly electric future?
Well, it's going to be the industry as a whole that we have to be watching. And of course, we'll see that at a variety of shows. The industry is betting heavily on electrification, everything from hybrids to plug-ins, and particularly all electric or battery electric vehicles, BEVs for shorthand. And nobody knows. This is the funny thing. Nobody really knows if this technology will catch on. Sure, regular hybrids are becoming more commonplace. Vehicles like the Toyota Prius is the best example. But when it comes to more and more advanced electric drive technologies, the market is very small. Only about 1% of new car buyers this year will actually purchase an all-electric vehicle. Now, there's a lot of forecasts that say it could be up to 25% or even 35% by the end of the coming decade. And with governmental pressures from all over the world, not just the U.S., but China and Europe in particular, the industry has to move in that direction. They're investing, depending on whose figures you trust, collectively more than $100 billion and perhaps as much as $250 billion. That's Carl Sagan type of numbers, to electrify. GM has said it's on a, quote, path to an all-electric future. We've seen the Chevy Bolt with a B, and we're going to see a Cadillac all-electric SUV in a matter of months. So they have to find ways to lower the prices, extend the range, put a charging network out there, and, oh, yes, get people excited about the idea of driving electric rather than gas-powered vehicles.
So with all these new kinds of vehicles coming on the market, how big a role do you foresee Michigan playing in their manufacturing?
Well, it's pretty important, in particular, that General Motors is committing to two factories here in the Detroit area, one being the Lake Orion or the Orion Township plant, which already builds the Bolt EV. That's their first long-range electric. And then the Hamtramck plant, Poletown plant, as we like to call it, as you know, here locally mm-hmm. in Detroit. And that will be building a bunch of new electric vehicles. Detroit should become an important hub. What's interesting, too, of course, Ford and eventually FCA will likely build electric vehicles here. But we're also looking at a bunch of startups in the area that are also getting into the electrification business. This is a time when there's an opportunity for new companies to enter like there hasn't been in the better part of a century. But we really don't know. I mean, they're spending a lot of money on stuff that nobody knows if it'll catch on.
Yeah. Well, I feel like that's true of so many things. I mean, they told us we'd be carrying phones around with us all day. And I was like, oh, God, please no.
Well, you know, it's one thing to have a phone run out of a charge when you are at the supermarket. It's another thing to be in Ann Arbor and trying to figure out how to get home.
Yeah, no lie.
It's funny because I remember sitting down with people in the business at the beginning of the decade when the first generation of electric vehicles was coming out. And they would tell me, oh, you know, you only need 70 or 80 miles because, you know, that's more than enough to do your commute and maybe an errand or two. And it was like, that's not the way the mind works. People buy big SUVs and pickups because they think possibly maybe once a year they're going to possibly perhaps maybe need it. And it's the same thing with EVs. Yeah, we don't often need to have 300 or 400 miles of driving range, but we forget to plug in or gas up. We wind up having to run an errand unexpectedly. You know, you're at work, you have only 30 miles of range left, and you have to get home because your kid is in the nurse's office at school and has to get to the doctor, and you don't have the range to do it. So that's, you know, the longer range vehicles will help.
I feel like so much of our traffic congestion policy and really auto industry is hanging on possibilities like this or probabilities. It's crazy.
One of the questions is, what happens to the auto industry when all these new technologies come out? So, for example, electric propulsion, the drivetrain technology, doesn't break down, or it shouldn't. Once they, you know, now that they're getting the hang of it, a gas vehicle pretty rarely made it to 200,000 miles.
Right.
They're thinking electric vehicles could last for 1 million. How does that affect what we do as owners? Do we wind up keeping them? Do we trade them in? What does that do if it's on the used car market? What does that do to the auto industry? What happens to sales?
Paul Eisenstein of the DetroitBureau.com. Paul, thank you very much. We will see you in the aisle where we can pick out our Madras plaid cummerbunds.
I will see you then.